Hey, it's Dan Patrick. Here's your chance to score with Maaco Auto Body Shop. Join us in San Francisco for Super Week. That's right, a trip for two, airfare, hotel stay, and VIP access to see us do our show. Maaco also giving away 5 free paint jobs and 10 swag bags. Enter daily for a chance to win. Get official rules at danpatrick.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Open to contiguous U.S. D.C. residents 18 or over. Ends 11/23/25.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. Bob and I are back from the Berkshires, and you are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 15, Episode 17, The Alibi Witnesses. This week, Bob broke down multiple witnesses to Jody's whereabouts the night in question. We have a lot to talk about, and Bob, Jant, and I are here to talk about it all.
All right. Yes, Zach and I had an amazing trip to the Berkshires this weekend. It was a wonderful 4 days. The weather was perfect. The air is beautiful. Josh Hallmark did an amazing job with the Berkshire Podcast Festival. Can't wait to do it again next year. If you didn't make it, make sure you go next year. If you want to hear all about it, check out the pregame. We talked about it there. But we've only got 42 minutes to get this thing done before Janet has to go, so we want to get right into it. Do want to do a little bit of housekeeping, just some scheduling things to let you guys know what's coming up. Because I just realized when I was looking at our schedule from Audio Boom that we have a dark week coming up. Totally forgot about it. Like last year or whatever, I must have said I'm taking this week off. When they ask us about our off weeks in there. So the week, just, it's a couple of weeks ahead from now. But the week of November 15th, there's no episode. So there'll be no episode on the 15th and the 17th. Between now and then, we've got this Sunday, 2 days, we're going to have the interview with Jakari Lariat. Sorry, could not remember how to pronounce his name. Drew a blank. Jakari Lariat interview that we did, I recorded about a week or so ago. We're going to hear that interview about an interaction he had with the police in the city of Benton Harbor. And then we're going to get back into the trial, and we're going to have an episode where we're breaking down the closing arguments of the prosecution. And then the next episode, we're going to cover the closing arguments of the defense and the rebuttal of the prosecution. And that is going to kind of wrap up the trial. Erica was looking today to see, to go through, was there any testimony that we missed? And there's a couple little things here and there, but nothing that's really super relevant. You know, it was like, you know, we didn't cover Rolanda Ware's testimony, who that was Mario's girlfriend. Her testimony is a couple pages long, and she testifies that, you know, that she saw that Mario brought that gun home. There's just not a whole lot of meat to it. So we may do kind of a hodgepodge where we piece that stuff together, or we're not sure exactly where we're going. I got some witnesses I'm trying to reach out to. I've made contact with a juror, but you know, as of right now, we're kind of getting to the end of the trial. Erica's going to start tomorrow going through the prosecutor's file and the whole thing and see if there's anything we missed that we need to cover, and we're going to be working to see if we can get some people to talk. I've got a list of people I want to speak to continue on with the new investigation. So all of that's coming up now, but we're getting closer to the end of the season, barring anything new coming up. We've got some announcements that we'll talk about when we get to the end, but you know, we could be a month or two away unless something breaks open here coming up. Or I'm also waiting. So this Friday, I got an email today. The Michigan State Police asked for an extension to this Friday, the 25th, for that FOIA. So we may have more information in that FOIA request. So just letting you guys know where things are at with that. And another thing that I would like to do, which I put this offer out every season. I haven't had anybody take me up on it in a long time. But I always like to ask anybody that, you know, after hearing all this, believes that Jody is guilty, I would like to invite any one of those people to come on and have a cordial conversation, not necessarily a debate, just a discussion where we can talk about why they feel, so they can make sure they're presenting why they feel why Jody's guilty compared to why I feel that Jody is innocent. And we can have that conversation. We're still weeks away from that. But if there's somebody that's interested in having that conversation on the air, please reach out to me in any way that you want to, either through email or on social media or whatever. And we'll try to make that arrangement. So all of that's what we got coming up. But again, we still have a few weeks to go get through and at least wrap up the trial before we move into a new investigation. So that's what's happening now. This week, we covered, you know, it felt to me, not necessarily to everybody, I didn't see that anyone's mind was changed based on what I've seen on social media. But this episode was kind of the nail in the coffin of the alibi to me. It seemed to completely, in my mind, really seal the deal on Jody's alibi. What did you guys think after listening?
What I'll say is earmuffs. What the fuck? They didn't call Princella back ever?
Yeah, no.
That floored me. When I heard that part where they just like, she continued to try to get a hold of them and they just never called her back.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me. The only reason it didn't surprise me to hear that, I mean, I've heard from her that, you know, that she never talked to them. I didn't get real details until getting into the trial transcript. But the fact, once I heard LaShawn tell me that they came in and talked to him that morning, mm-hmm. and he told him Jody was working, and, you know, they said the murder happened at this time, and he's like, oh, well, Jody was here. And then they continued on with this. It didn't surprise me one bit that they had no interest in...
Yeah, they don't want to find bad evidence.
...talking to anybody from the restaurant.
It's crazy to me. Absolutely crazy to me. Go ahead, Janet.
No, I mean, I agree. I didn't... It's, you know, it's very helpful if you are already of the opinion that this is not an episode that's shocking, right? It's not full of surprises because right. It's like, we knew that this alibi existed. We knew about these folks. And now we're just sort of seeing how it played out on trial. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I really liked how you came at it. I really appreciated and respected the fact that you said that there are people who are working so hard to disprove you when they could be potentially working cleaner, because that sounds disrespectful of me, in a way that would advance facts, and that doesn't, I don't perceive it as necessarily doing that. And yeah, I appreciated that very much. And you know, I just kind of continue to go, well, I mean, for it, as you were talking about that, all I could think was like, I mean, I think people are just going to say that all these people are lying. Like, that's just, you know what I'm saying? I just kind of sighed and thought, I would just assume that if you've already decided Jody's guilty, then the only thing you can do with this really is say, well, they're all lying together. And I just imagine someone being like, well, Bob, you said that everyone, you know, was lying about putting Jody at the scene. So why can't all of these people be lying about, you know, that, why can't this be a conspiracy to keep Jody away from being fingered as the killer, you know?
And the reason is, I've seen those comments come up, and there's a distinct difference. In that case, there's evidence that they're lying, right? So we see, you know, with the Miles family, we see what they told police initially. We see what they told police the second time. And then we see what they told police, or what they testified to at trial. And those stories change the whole time. It conflicts with the other evidence. So you got Canvas saying Mario's over here, but they're saying Mario's hanging. You know, there's, it's not like we're just pulling out of a hat that these people are lying. There's evidence to support that. In this case, as far as the alibi goes, we have one piece of solid evidence, of actual physical evidence, and that is the timesheet. And there's people, of course, that still question the timesheet. But so then, okay, well, what evidence do we have for the timesheet? Well, Sean said, day one, talk to McGinnis. Told McGinnis when Jody was working, knew that that was past the time when the murder happened. And then they don't interview them again until 2 weeks before the trial. They all tell him the same thing. He left around midnight. Jody left around midnight, or Joseph, as they said then, you know, left around midnight. It's the same thing. That, what they all said, lines up with what the timesheet says. Lines
Except
up with
that
what
one
Jody
person
said.
Who you said was kind of all over the place. And you said, you know, if you're going to try to poke holes in this, then it's this woman who's...
Well, yeah, but even that, Nadia didn't have anything to do with the timesheet. That was
that had to do
with after Jody got home.
Right.
But there was a conflict between her and Cheryl about who picked up when and how that all shook out. Right. But as far as the work goes, everything is consistent. Like, so the only, like, there's no evidence to support the idea that these people are lying or that they're all wrong.
Right.
You can wish that. You can hope that. I do want to address, like Chris just said in the chat, that she said, I'm always bummed to hear that I'm not being intellectually honest to lean guilty.
I'm not talking about you, Chris.
Yeah.
I'm also not saying that. I'm saying the people who work vigorously to prove Bob wrong, not to prove that someone is guilty, but in what appears to be an effort to just make Bob look stupid. I've never thought of you as that person.
Yeah. No, me neither. And in general, I want to point out, I've never said, so for example, there's a lot of discussion after this episode on the fan page this week. And since this episode dropped, still kind of the same people that still don't buy the time cards. You know, and it was like, it just, this episode was kind of a litmus test for me. Because what I kept hearing is like, well, I want to see what the other witnesses said. I want to see what Princella and LaShawn and Cornelius testified to. Then they get it. And it still lines up with, and they still don't believe it. But in that discussion, a listener, Chris, popped in and said, I don't think the timesheet's manipulated or fabricated. I think the timesheet's legit. I think the restaurant people are telling the truth. I just think that after Jody got home, Jody left and went and killed Mario. Based on the two, like, and I told him in that chat, I was like, that's fair. I disagree, but that's a fair discussion. That's an intellectually honest position. You can try and make that argument, right? Because there's some ambiguity there. Whether the crime happened at 12:40. Or whether it happened before midnight, there's, you know, was the 20 or 30 minutes that Cornelia says that they were hanging out talking. What if that was only 5 minutes? Or, you know, there's room to have that discussion. That's a fair discussion as far as I'm concerned. To look at all three, you know, Princella from beginning to end, I came in, it was 11 o'clock, the lights were on. I pointed at the clock and said, what the hell? It's 11 o'clock. Why are all these lights still on? Why is every light in the restaurant on? They're still working. There's a ton of dishes still to do. LaShawn and Cornelius both say we left around midnight. You know, they don't have the exact time. You wouldn't expect them to have the same time.
Yeah.
The timesheet says Jody clocked out at 12:05. And then you have Kenya signed off on the timesheet. She verified that on Saturday that, you know, this is like, 100% of the evidence all supports that the timesheet is valid, that time is the right time. What, and literally all of it. So to say that, you know, I've heard theories that, you know, and I think somebody's like, I think what they're trying to imply without saying it is that I'm lying about the fact that the timesheet was in the prosecutor's file. Cause like their theory was, if I understood it right, was that, yeah, well, Jody got that timesheet. Like, Jody's the one that presented the timesheet. I don't know where Jody would have got, like, the timesheet form in jail and then, like, forged the signature of Kenya and wrote all this stuff into it. But no, basically, they're questioning that McGinnis ever got the timesheet, you know, that it came from Jody. But it's like, no, it was in the prosecutor's file. That's where I got it. That's where the attorney general got it.
Yeah.
And as I told them, if you don't believe me, file a FOIA request with the prosecutor's office. And you can find it in the file. Like, that's where it came from.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost.
On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
So when I'm talking about not being intellectually honest, Chris, and anybody else that's listening, it's when you are bombarded with fact after fact after fact that all support the exact same conclusion, and you insist that there's a different conclusion without citing a single piece of evidence. There's a lot of, well, what if this person lied? Or what if Jody did this? But there's no evidence to support the fact that any of that stuff happened. Not that I've seen, not that anybody's presented to me. So I just want to clear that up. I've never had a problem with anybody. And if you look on the fan page, you'll see me having, I have more discussions on the fan page with people that think Jody's guilty or the whoever we're talking about every season is guilty than I do with people that are innocent, the people that are just agreeing with me. I want to have those conversations with people that are coming from the other side. But you got to give me a logical argument and evidence, not just keep insisting that the way it feels to me is I've decided Jody's guilty. Therefore, that's the evidence that that time card can't be right. Like that's it. Like the time card just can't be right, because if the time card's right, then Jody's innocent. And that means, and I don't even think it means I'm wrong. It means Bob's right. And that can't be okay that particular group.
So I wonder what would happen if those files, those missing pieces of evidence, those things that could implicate McGinnis, if those things come to light by virtue of another person having the file, by the other institution having the file, by the work that, you know, the attorney, who's the conviction integrity unit. Like, there are other places where that stuff could make itself known that doesn't have anything to do with you. So I guess I'm curious, like, what will happen then? And if that never happens, then that never happens. But I'm just wondering, like, would that change anything? I don't know.
And ultimately, it doesn't matter. I mean, people are going to have their opinions, and that's going to be their opinions. I've come to the conclusion that there are people that are just, it doesn't matter what they find. Like, we could show them, I feel like I could show them rock solid evidence. Irrefutable evidence that the crime happened at 11:45. And I think they would still insist that Jody's guilty.
Yeah. Well, Chris says the time card is a hand scribbled note. And by the way, we do have some questions about the time card, including one of Chris's. In fact, let's start with that, because Chris, you put it very nicely in the follow up. Chris says, I'm guessing the timesheet evidence wasn't all that compelling. How much of what was presented in this episode was heard by the jury?
I mean, it was all trial testimony. So that everything was heard by the jury.
And Chris just adds, if it's a hand scribbled note with a sort of, not sure what that word is supposed to be, Chris, it's a Stramfish signature that it looks like a child signed it or something. That's a characterization of it. What do you think about that?
that's the discussion, right? That people are having. They're pointing out, you know, they're looking at the way it's written, and that, you know, that Jody said Sean punched me out, but there's no punch out. It's, you know, it's a handwritten thing, and it's scribbled, so maybe it's, you know, maybe it's four or something like that. Like, that's the kind of arguments we're getting, is like looking at it and trying to think, well, that could mean this, and maybe it could mean that, but there's no evidence that it does mean that. It was, what I was told was that McGinnis came back 2 days later, either on Sunday or Monday, asked for the timesheet. Kenya gave him the timesheet. And then that was verified to me because when I got the case file from the prosecutor that was given to the prosecutor by McGinnis, the timesheet was in there. So I don't understand where this argument comes from. That, like, okay, like she said, Kenya signs like a 12-year-old. Well, that's her signature. I don't know. Unless the implication is that Jody forged it and Kenya didn't notice when she gave it to him, or is Kenya lying about it, and Princella and Sean are lying about Kenya giving it to him. I don't know. But, like, this is what I'm saying. There's no evidence to support that. You know, I mean, there's no, it's like you can look at it and be like, well, I think that might mean maybe, but there's no evidence to suggest that at all. And yeah. I even posted on the fan page an email that McGinnis had sent to Princella. It was like after the trial, she had emailed him and was saying like, hey, you know, Joe, how could this be? Jody didn't leave work until midnight, and they were just learning then that this timesheet was in a file somewhere. And McGinnis's response back to her said that, look, I believe all of you. I'll show you. I'm going to send you the notes that you said. You know, Cornelia said that they left around 11:50. Sean thinks it was 11:45. This is all a year later. And Princella said that they were there at 11. And McGinnis essentially says in there, like, I believe Jody didn't leave work till midnight, but it doesn't matter because the crime didn't happen until 12:40. So, like, all the people here, I can tell you from lawyers, I can tell you all the way up to the attorney general's office, no one has ever questioned the validity of that timesheet. No one ever. Until this group on Facebook now that is questioning it, and it's okay to question it, but if you want me to be on board with it and agree with you, you have to show me some evidence that happened. What I see is all of the witnesses saying that it's legit. I see that the witnesses saying it was given to McGinnis, and I see it in the prosecutor's file, the file that the prosecutor got from McGinnis. So I can't just jump to that conclusion because there's no evidence to support it.
I guess, yeah. I mean, what you're saying right now is helpful because I hadn't thought of it in terms of McGinnis saying, I don't think any of these people are lying or wrong. I'm just saying that the crime happened in such a way that all of that can be true and Jody can be responsible, which is what, you know, it sounds like some folks who are leaning guilty also think. So then the burden becomes not on the alibi or questioning the time card anymore. It becomes about all of those other factors that seem to lend credibility or certainly a lot of question about when that guy's shift got off, how long, you know, someone sat in their car, whether or not a police officer or a detective reported something happening when it did that is in conflict with the new official story.
Like, my thing is, like I said, we can have the argument about if Jody got off at 12:05, left at 12:05, and still had enough time to commit the murder. I don't believe they did. And it was about 6-7 minute drive back to the apartment. Jody and Cornelius both say they had a conversation. Let's say that is even 10 minutes. And then Jody goes inside, goes to bed. Sherelle leaves. And then for Jody then to drive the 7 minutes to the crime scene. And again, as I broke down in the episode, if you believe Jody did it, then you have to believe Victoria's version of the story.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only version of the story that would indicate, because like I said in the episode, you can't believe Shamika, because Shamika saw a whole group of people out there with Mario.
Right.
You know, so it has to be Victoria's version. And that version, the car drives up, drives slow, parks in the back, walks up to Mario, has like a pleasant conversation with Mario that turns into an argument, and then the gunshots. Jody had to be there by like 12:35 at a minimum. And then Jody would have to leave their apartment then by like close to 12:30 or before 12:30. Like, you start to really run out of time for that 12:40 timeline if you have any amount of time for Jody and Cornelius to talk in there. That's a conversation you can have.
Right.
If you believe it was 12:40 and if you believe they left at 12:05, is there enough time there? But as far as like the timesheet being fake, that's, I'm sorry, I don't mean to demean people, but that's nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
It's nonsense. There's no evidence to support it.
Well, isn't there in Victoria's original statement too? Didn't she say there was a crowd of people out there?
Not in her original statement. According to what we heard Jody say on the stand in the 911 call, they said, did you see the person that left? And they said, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of people down there. Is what Jody said, Victoria said on the call. But we, of course, don't have that recording. Hoping that we'll get it on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, that's nuts. That's hard to have to say, this person said this about this thing that was played in court, but we don't have any record of it. I mean, all of that is just, that's just a mess.
And this is what I wonder, too, that crowd that believes that Jody is guilty of this. Would it change their thoughts anymore that we have Chamika saying there was a crowd of people out there with Mario? If we get the recording and we hear Victoria saying there's a crowd of people out there, or there was a crowd of people out there, at that point, will we finally let go of the fact that it wasn't Jody out there all by themselves?
I mean, all this sort of reminds me of Pinyon Pines too, which is that ultimately, if you feel that the boys had enough time to get up there and do it, then you feel that way, and like that's all you need to say you've decided they're guilty. It doesn't matter what the rest of the evidence is.
Right.
Okay. Well, this staying with the time card stuff, and we've touched on this. Maybe we've got the concrete answers out there already in this episode, and I just am not clocking it the right way. But Kathy says, "Do you know why the time card wasn't entered into evidence to support the alibi witnesses' testimony?"
So listener Joni just shared, I don't know where she got it, if it was like, you know, in the court docket where they're, if it from like the appeals, I don't know, but they had a letter from Ernie White, who was Jody's attorney. And it was like during the appeals process, I think Jody must have written them a letter asking about the time card. And White in that letter said that he never received a time card from the state. So that I would assume was the biggest reason. And remember, Jody did have Jody got a copy of the police file while they were in jail awaiting trial. And I don't know if that came from because their original, because Jody went through four attorneys. So there was Paul Jancha. I don't remember the name of the second guy that took over, but that was for the robbery. Because remember, Jody wasn't charged with this murder until April or May. So they were only in jail for the robbery. And then they got Renfro was their attorney that was going to represent them in the murder. In a letter from Renfro, they show another Giovanna, I think another listener had shared, and from that same file, a letter from Renfro said that he does recall there being a time card that they were going to use in the defense, but doesn't remember, you know, didn't remember anything else about it. But then White said White never got it. So my personally, I think it didn't come out because White either didn't have it because it wasn't turned over to them by the state, or he was just completely unprepared. And we're going to read through all the trial testimony. It seems that White was incredibly unprepared for any of this. Jody was far more, because Jody had been studying that case file the whole time they were in jail. So Jody had a better grip on the investigation than White did.
But nothing that rose to the level of an effective assistance of counsel, presuming.
So far.
Yes, I did see some of that. And Jessica, adding to that, says, was Cornelius's time card ever obtained since he was Jody's ride home? Maybe this could further corroborate or disprove the story and help us in some certain direction that way.
No, it never was. And I had a discussion on the Facebook page about that as well with somebody. And they were kind of putting that on, it seemed like they were kind of putting that on like Jody or the restaurant staff. Like, well, why didn't we ever see Cornelius's? They could have verified with Cornelius's. Why didn't we see Cornelius's? But we have to understand is we're all looking at this in hindsight. The restaurant staff, they are not lawyers. We're talking about LaShawn and Princella and Cornelius. They're not lawyers. They're not investigators. They have no idea what's going on with this trial. They had no contact with anybody until 2 weeks before trial when they're first contacted. Now, what LaShawn knew is that he had already told the police that Jody was working during the time of the murder. And I don't think I think they only found out later from, if I understand right, from Princella. They only found out later from Kenya that Kenya had given the time. I think that's why, you know, a lot of the appeal stuff happened, because Kenya's like, no, I gave that to McGinnis, like, or whoever the detective was, gave the time card to them. But for the three of them, you know, the police that they assume are doing the right thing, come to them before trial and say, what time did you see Jody? Princella says, I was there at 11 and they were still had a bunch of work to do when I left at like 11:15. And then, you know, Cornelia said, you know, I think we left around midnight. Sean says, I think we left around midnight. And that was it. So as far as they know, and then they weren't in the, because they were witnesses, they were sequestered during the trial. They didn't see what was coming out during the trial. They got on the stand. They said what they knew. So I think people like have this idea in their mind that they should have been like investigating this and finding the, like they didn't know. It was not their job responsibility, nor did they know that they needed to go find more evidence to support this time. There's no way for them to have known that.
Well, and also, again, if the rhetoric that's out there is none of that matters because the crime happened after Jody got off, then why would you know to chase it down anyway? Because you wouldn't know everything that we now know about the discrepancy there, right?
Well, and what does Cornelius's time card give us? He said he clocked out at 10 and said he stayed around for a couple hours.
Yeah. So it probably wouldn't tell us much.
So
anyway.
It would just be speculation again. Even if we got it and it said 10, he says he stayed around for a couple hours. So it's all speculation as to.
Yeah, it really wouldn't make a difference if he actually was, if his memory was right about that he got off that early.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The point I was making was the person that should have gotten Cornelius's time card is McGinnis. It was his job to verify all that. And to your point, Janet, as far as them not knowing the time of the murder, Princella and LaShawn and Cornelius didn't know that they said the murder happened at 12:40 until after the trial. And remember, like, LaShawn doesn't remember the exact conversation they had, but what he remembers about that conversation hours later, that morning, is that they came in looking for Jody, and they said, this person was killed. This is what time it happened. And he's like, no, we were still here. We didn't. Jody was here with me until after that. So when they went to trial and told that, as far as they knew, that was the alibi. They found out after the trial was over, and you can see it in that email from McGinnis even. He's like, well, it doesn't matter because the crime happened at 12:40. And that's when they're like, wait, what? And there was even more emails back and forth, you know, Brunzella had sent me that she sent to other officers and stuff along the way, where she's like, I always thought the crime happened at like 11:45. Like, we all thought it happened at 11:45.
And the reason they thought that could only be that someone told them
right
that it mattered when they were checking Jody's alibi.
Yeah. So they fully thought they were going in there and they were telling them what time Jody left. As far as they knew, that should have alibied Jody because from what the information they had. So it wasn't like now when we're looking back on this, where we're like, well, we could do this and this to verify this and corroborate this, and this could, you know, fill these time gaps in. They didn't know any of that stuff. You know, and Jody didn't know any of that stuff. You even heard Jody, if you read his testimony, read their testimony, Jody at one point says, you know, the crime happened at 11:45 or whatever. Because according to Jody, in the original police file they had, there was more in it. Like, there was an interview with Sonia Lucas. There was an interview with Sonia Lucas' stepdad. All that stuff was not in the file that was given to discovery before trial. I have no way of verifying that, but that's what Jody says. But Jody was under the impression still when they got to court that the murder happened at 11:45. They even say it in their testimony that, you know, this happened at what? I don't know, 11:45 or whatever. This is when this happened. So it was kind of a surprise to everyone on the defense side when they came out and said it happened at 12:40.
And just to draw a circle around this, I'm sorry, I know this has been asked before, but we don't know how hard or easy would it be to get a copy of the police file when you're in jail if you're the suspect.
I don't know. The way Jody, I'll have to ask them again about, I asked it a long time ago, where some of the records that the, because I had a version of the police file that came from Jody's appellate attorneys, like through their advocates and stuff, that it got passed down through to me before I filed the FOIAs to get the official record. And Jody had said that they had a family member that got the copy. It sounded like they got the copy of it from the attorney and then took a copy of it and took it to jail and gave it to Jody. That Jody didn't get it directly from the attorney, that it got it from a family member in between there somehow.
Okay. Valeria says, can you please clarify the relationship between Kenya, LaShawn, and Princella? I believe they were all siblings. Could you also clarify what contact you've had with Kenya, either direct or with her siblings?
Yeah, they're all siblings. I have not personally spoken to Kenya. So I have, you've heard me, I mean, I've interviewed LaShawn and Princella. And with Kenya, there was one point she was up here visiting. She didn't live in the state. She lives across the country. But she was up here visiting, and we were trying to come up with a time for me to try to meet up with her, and it didn't work out. And then, actually, before we came on today, I asked Princella if she can put me in contact with Kenya because of the questions that are coming up about her. I would like to hear directly from her exactly how this works out. Because the only, you know, when I talked to LaShawn in my interview with him, I was, you know, we talked about the time card. He said, if I saw it, I could tell who the handwriting is. I sent him the time card, and he said, oh, yeah, that's Kenya's. And I said, well, was Kenya there that? Because I think Jody had said they thought they remembered Kenya like passing through that night. I asked Sean, is Kenya there? He talked to Kenya and said yes. And that's all my contact that I've had. It's only been passed through LaShawn. I haven't spoken to Kenya directly about it. So I'm going to try to talk to her to answer some of these questions for people about Kenya. My understanding was she didn't, you know, she played a very, very little role in all of this. You know, she wasn't there working that night. Maybe she passed through. I don't know if that was communicated clearly through everybody what we were asking there. You know, she had just verified the timesheet and then gave it to McGinnis, and that was it. And then she had moved away, so she wasn't there. You know, McGinnis, and there's another one where people are like, well, why have we never heard from Kenya? And as though like there's something, you know, something nefarious going on like at the time of trial with Kenya. And then again, it's the same thing as with Cornelius. The person who should have contacted Kenya about the timesheet is McGinnis. He's the one. But again, McGinnis never questioned the time card.
Mm-hmm.
According to them, he got it directly from Kenya. So I would assume that's why he never contacted Kenya to say, is this legit? Because he knows it's legit. But if he had a question about it, that would have been his job to contact Kenya about the time card, if there was any question about it, and he never did.
Got it. Liz says, I'm very impressed by Princella as a witness, business owner, and all around an apparently upstanding individual. It's been mentioned several times that she was running for local office. Whatever happened with that? Did she ever move on to a role in local government?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if she ever, I don't think she was ever mayor. She's kind of a pillar in the community. She runs several organizations within City Benton Harbor. She runs a newspaper that she's in charge of for like local news in Benton Harbor and stuff like that. So she's always been very involved in the community and, you know, part of different volunteer groups and stuff within the community. I don't know if she ever actually held a seat in office or not.
Got it. This is our Giovanna that we were talking about earlier. Giovanna says, this is from a previous episode, I believe. If it's been asked and answered, apologies. Why would the state offer Leon a deal to turn on Jody? Leon was in jail during the time of the murders. How would it have been possible for Leon to turn on Jody and testify against them?
Because the main point of prosecution against Jody was the robbery. They presented little to no evidence that Jody was actually part of the robbery. I mean, you guys have the transcripts. You can read them. Like the entirety of the evidence that Jody was part of the murder, the entirety of it was Victoria saying that she saw a tall, skinny man with a ponytail running away, and Sonia Lucas saying that Mario in his dying breath said that JoJo did it. Like, you understand, like for all the people that are really leaning into Jody's guilty, that's all of it. Like, there's not even circumstantial evidence outside of that. That's the entire case for the murder. Those are the only things that put Jody at that crime scene. And of course, we know Sonia has already recanted and said that story was absolute bullshit. That came from McGinnis, who pressured her into saying it. Victoria's statement, I think, is bullshit, considering she said she couldn't see, you know, there's no everything we've already said, right? There's no light on that building. She already said she couldn't see the person. She already said there was plastic on the windows, and then she came out with a description later. But that's the entirety of the evidence that they presented against Jody. You know, they got, you know, DNA on the bullet. Who did it come back to? Not Jody. Andrew Wayne Bell. That's who that came back to. You got, you know, other witnesses that didn't testify at trial that said they saw a group of people there. You've got the sound test of the car. Like that's all there was. The majority of the trial was convincing the jury that Jody was responsible for the robbery or was part of the robbery, and that was the motive for the murder. So that's what they wanted Leon to testify to, was that Jody absolutely was a part of the robbery so that they could drive that nail home.
Right. Liz says, when will we hear directly from Jody next? I would love to hear more about their reflection on their testimony, including the parts pertaining to their alibi for the night of the murder, as opposed to the night of the robbery.
I will try to arrange that sometime soon. I've emailed a little bit back and forth with Jody, but we've been so dug into getting through the trial right now that we haven't talked. And Jody moved units in the middle of all that, and they have a little bit different schedule now. But I'll try to get Jody on the phone now too, especially because we're coming up on the end of the trial. And we're trying to figure out like how much more evidence do we have to go through before we, you know, or if we're going to wrap the season or continue it on or see what else we can find. So I'll reach out to Jody and see if we can find a time to do that.
Keisha says, I am at a loss for questions because this one seems so obvious that Jody could not have done this crime. I just want to jump to getting the conviction thrown out. Do we have to prove who really did it?
No. I mean, there's not a lot I can share right now, but no, I do not think that we do.
Great. Well, Daniel made a specific reference to the prosecutor in the Kristen Smart murder trial. Of course, you featured Chris on your own podcast, True Crime Binge, but this idea of a statement on conspiracy. So in this case, he's comparing what you said in the episode to sort of like, if this, then this, if this, then this, if this, then this, there's your conspiracy. That was a similar case that was made by the prosecutor. So I'm not sure how familiar you are with that case, but essentially Daniel is complimenting you on your discussion at the very end of the episode, sort of saying, if you believe that this alibi is bullshit, then you have to believe all of these other things as well. And does that not seem like a stretch?
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar a bit with the case, not so much with the trial or how the prosecutor presented it, but that as far as like saying it's obvious, that's how I feel about it. And that's, I said on the fan page yesterday, I was like, I truly, some of these discussions feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. And maybe they feel that way about me too. I mean, but like to me, I've never seen a better alibi in the cases that we've covered. I've never seen one that was so clear that you have LaShawn, Princella, Cornelius, and Sherelle, and of course Jody, all saying the exact same thing, and a timesheet that confirms everything that they said, signed off by another person, Kenya, that all show that Jody could not have committed this murder.
if the murder happened when it was originally purported to have been committed.
In my opinion, even if the murder happened at 1240. And again,
okay.
And again, the argument, if you listen, if you read what was stipulated to, which, you know, obviously I have my problem with that, but the stipulation was that Victoria's 911 call was at 1240, which would mean the murder happened even before that, you know, whether it's a minute, 2 minutes, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But even, you know, for me, it's like, gets off at 1205. If they leave immediately and they get to the house at 1212 and they have even a 10-minute conversation, it's 1222, and then go into the house. And even if it's even that whole thing, getting into the house, having the discussion, laying down and her leaving is only a total of 5 minutes, which all this is cutting tons of time out. Now it's 1227, and then Jody's got to go downstairs and go get in the car. So even if that's 2 minutes, that's 1229. And then a 7-minute drive over to 784 Broadway, assuming for somehow Jody knows that that's where Mario just happens to be hanging out. That's, I lost track of where I'm at, but I think that we're at 1237, 1240 before Jody could even possibly get there. And then you have to have the park in the car, the walking up, the conversation, the argument, the shots starting, the murder, you know, the shots going into the house, Mario dying, Jody fleeing, and then the 911 call at 1240. Like, it, even at 1240, it doesn't work. If I can make a timeline there that worked, then I would say, well, if this, then this. But it's like, even at the most extreme, if we ignore all the evidence that it happens before midnight, even at the most extreme, if the 911 call was at 1240, it still doesn't work.
But this is someone's life that we're talking about. How can we ignore the evidence that suggests that the crime took place so much earlier? You can't ignore it. You No. can't throw it away. That's not how our justice system is supposed to work. But No. I guess I'm interested because I have seen some of the discussion on Facebook, and it does seem that there are people who believe that Jody is guilty who also believe that this police department is capable of misconduct. So I guess that's my question for, you know, you is like, do you have a sense that the overwhelming majority of people who are saying it clearly Jody is guilty for XYZ, are they also stipulating to the possibility that there could be some sketchy stuff going on in that department? Because I feel like we have a lot of stories, a lot of anecdotes, and a lot of facts suggesting that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I don't know how anybody could question that this department is capable of that kind of corruption. We've seen it before. We literally heard a former Benton Harbor cop interviewed talking about the shit that they were doing to frame people.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not uncommon at all.
In fact, what's this Sunday's episode going to be?
In fact, this Sunday's episode is with Jakari Lariat. You guys are going to hear about all his story that happened this year. It was not Benton Harbor cops. It was state troopers working in the city of Benton Harbor. It's an insane story. Jakari is an amazing guy. It's an amazing story. So make sure you tune in to hear that on Sunday. And Janet, we are right on time for your heart out to go watch Brandon do his improv or be part of it.
Performing in it. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So we're going to let you guys go. Make sure you tune in on Sunday. I'm taking off tomorrow to head down to Dallas. And again, if any of you guys have any video footage from Ed's release, send that to me. It may find its way onto the small screen.
Very exciting.
Coming up. With all that being said, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @TruthJusticePod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.